Welcome to this episode of the India Dunn & Company podcast. In this episode, I get to have an amazing conversation, a revelatory conversation, an inspiring, empowering conversation with hairdresser and creative Abe Barone. I enjoy this, and I hope you will too. And welcome to the India Dunn & Company podcast. Today, I have a very special friend of mine who I'll be speaking with, who is going to share his experience with you, Mr. Abe Barone. Thank you so much for coming into this call and sharing with me today and our listeners. So who are you?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here with you and in this journey. I remember you coming and talking to me first about what you were doing with this whole thing you started a while ago, and to see it now with you all over the place and doing all this stuff has been pretty amazing. And a lot of people things that they want to do and then they just kind of put it to the side when it doesn't happen, and I've just watched you plug away and it's been pretty cool to see. So I'm glad to be here with you. I am a hairdresser. I've been a hairdresser for 28 years here in San Diego. I know it's a long time. I love what I do. Sometimes I hate it. I own a salon. My wife is a hairdresser. And I like helping people. Yeah,
you do. In a lot of different ways, in a lot of different communities. It's amazing to watch you, do your thing in all the arenas that you work in. And so the workshop is in San Diego, California. And how long have you been running that business?
That location we've had now for 7 years. 7 years.
Wow. Yeah,
I opened my first salon in 2001, I think. The salon, it was in Old Town. After working for a while, I wanted to kill every hairdresser that I had with me and took a break. I needed a break. It took a break. Being around hairdressers is very hard. And then decided to open up again because I couldn't work for anybody else. Right. Set in my ways and culture. And, you know, it's hard to kind of be in a booth rental situation when the culture is not there. Mm.
Right. Yeah, right. So we'll step into like how we know each other, because I came up under you as an apprentice assistant to Robert Cromines, and you had already been with Robert Cromines for a couple of years at the point that I came in. Is that true?
You were actually brought in right when I was leaving the assistant program. So it was about a year.
So it was the opposite. I thought you were already there when I got there.
I was there for a year. And he was moving me to PB when he had just opened PB, and you were coming in to be the next after me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. So that's the culture that you and I grew up in.
Yes.
And you're saying, you know, like it's difficult. It is difficult to move from that culture and go into a booth rent situation and be with hairdressers who don't have a culture. And there's lots of different lines of thinking, but, you know, with all the experience that you've had after leaving Robert, opening up your own salon, having, you know, how many hairdressers did you have at the salon?
At the salon, there was 34.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I shouldn't take all the credit for it. I had a partner, Liz, who now owns her own salon, Salon Inc. in Mission Hills.
Mission Hills.
Who has a successful salon now.
Right.
We separated a year, I think a year after opening, and she went to open up her own, and I stayed there at the salon for another 5 years, I think, before I shut it down. I had a spa downstairs, and then a barbershop. It was a three-story building. I had the salon on the third floor, a small spa the second, and a barbershop cafe on the bottom floor. Yeah.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah. Go big or go home.
That was a lot. Well, you did what Robert trained us to do. That's for sure.
Right.
You know, growing hairdressers in all the best ways.
Yeah.
So when you look back at that, do you just have like a lot of gratitude? Do you see a little bit of regret? Is there anything that kind of eats you up about, you know, something you wish you could have done different?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't ready to own a salon. I thought after 9 years of being with Robert that I was ready. And there was a lot of circumstances that kind of helped push me to do it. I think now that I probably wouldn't be a salon owner if I had the choice, but I've been doing it for so long that it's hard to go back. My first life lesson I tell people when I teach is, you know, if you're going to own a salon, don't do it, because it's really difficult. And it's not as much money in owning a salon as people think, you know.
My second life
lesson is always, if you don't have kids, don't have them, because they will just eat you up.
And, oh my gosh, right? And cause the worst anxiety you've ever experienced.
Right? I have 25-year-old and 24-year-old, and it still doesn't stop. It's insane.
No. I've come to that conclusion as well. It's just, it doesn't matter how old she is, you know, how independent she becomes. It's still just anxiety ridden.
Yeah. Yeah. So I probably have more regrets than I do like woohoos of doing it. Anything good out of it was, you know, having the employees that I did, the relationships I had, and growing hairdressers and seeing them now, you know, where they're at, and just seeing their success and all that. I mean, in my time in San Diego, as long as I've been a hairdresser, I've had, oh my God, so many assistants. It's insane. And to see them out doing their own thing and being successful is there's a lot of gratitude in that. And as the years pass, the relationships get stronger in a different way, I think.
Right.
Regrets, definitely opening a salon. The separation of the partnership with Liz after a year. I was pretty young and high strung and had so many strong beliefs and things that I didn't bend, you know, in situations. And but
gotcha.
I'm happy that she's successful in doing her own thing, you know.
I mean, you know, obviously we can all have some perspective now looking back. Yeah. It was totally meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I, you know, I did the whole retrospect, sent her a big old email on it all. And we have a good friendship now, so it's nice.
That's great.
And, you know, just the toll it took on my family, you know, I think it was part of the cause of my divorce and, you know, stuff that happened. It's a lot, you know, 5,000 square foot salon with 34 employees is huge. I don't know how Robert and Maggie did what they did with all of us. It's
insane. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if anything, God, just the perspective, you know, on what we were, you know, given as a result of having been able to work for Robert and Margaret Crummings. I would imagine that you having your own place and seeing what it takes gave you some great perspective on what they were having to do on a daily basis to keep that all together.
Completely. And, you know, I tell young hairdressers today that, you know, when you find a mentor, once you find what kind of hairdresser you want to be, which most hairdressers in school have no clue or idea. As I did, you know, my mom forced me to be a hairdresser. I was a construction worker, gangster, and she said, join the Navy or be a hairdresser. And what I learned about hair was what I learned from the students in the school, and they had no idea. You know, their idea was hanging out in the back, smoking cigarettes and eating and gossiping, and I'm going to be my own boss, and I'm going to make all this money and have my own schedule, and it's going to be fun, and I can dress this way. And, you know, when I got out of school and got the job with Robert, which, you know, kind of was accidental. I dialed the wrong number. You know, I was blessed in the fact that I was taught the number one important thing of hair was the business side of it and how you are as a person, you know, the way you talk, the way you look, the way you act, your customer service. And I always tell kids now when we teach, like, once you figure out the kind of hairdresser you're going to be, which usually goes to your lifestyle of living, right? If you want to be $100,000 hairdresser or more, you can't just have all these pink and purple color short haircuts with college kids and high school kids. You know, you're going to have to figure out how to be and how to act. So the mentor that you are under should be that person. And I was blessed that Robert was a businessman / hairdresser. I always say businessman first because he was a brilliant business mind for hair anyway. And I think that learning that with the skills later, not only for him, but for the team that was around, Stephanie, Takashi, you know, all those, I think that's what helped, you know. And if you're going to want to be a salon owner, work for somebody who's a successful salon owner and learn that, you know. And Robert and Maggie never hid that stuff from us. They talked about it all the time and showed us things. And that was a blessing for me.
It was. Yeah. Well, I mean, just being in the midst of such an incredible turning point from, you know, Jean Bra handing over, you know, the throne, so to speak, or passing the torch, you know, to Robert right when we're getting there. It was just such an incredible opportunity to see all the changes that were going to happen in the industry as a result of Robert kind of being, you know, a way shower. I mean, he really was a trailblazer.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if a lot of people in San Diego understand the whole thing and appreciate it the way we do, or others in the industry from outside do. Cause
no, I don't think they do.
You know, regardless of my relationship with Robert, he is the man in the industry as far as, you know, what he does and what he's set apart from everybody else. You know, he started, I mean, the wash house, there's the color bar, there's so many trends. And you look at all the Palm Mitchell schools, there's over 100, and they all have the same culture that he started that everybody thought was crazy. And I wouldn't do that.
Right.
You know, and, you know, what he set into place and who he is in our industry as far as the educational wise. Because, you know, when you look at our industry, there's so many avenues to what we do. And people in session work, you know, session hairdressers like in Orlando Pita don't see Robert the way we see Robert because we don't live in that realm, you know, but in our realm of what we do, and especially in the salon. And I always tell people, Robert, outside the show stuff, Robert is an amazing salon hairdresser. You know, the attention to detail and customer service to a client is insane. The show stuff is fun and, what is he doing there, that, but
and he's funny, you know, he's a showstopper. I mean, he's definitely got that stage presence, but at the same time, he was able to go behind the chair and be intimate with his clientele in a way that made him, you know, the success that he is as a salon owner.
Yeah, and when you look at the people that left his place that have been successful in what they do,
I mean,
there's so many, you know, and it was an amazing thing, and especially because Jean was still involved a little bit. So we got to have that little bit of her. And I always tell people, it's like your DNA, your bloodline, you know.
Totally. Jean was with
Paul. Paul was with Vidal. You know, Robert was with Jean, who got all of that stuff. And then we got all of that. And we passed all that shit down to everybody else, you know, intertwined with who else we got with. You know, it's pretty amazing. Yeah. It really is.
No.
Yeah.
Really. It's so great because I just did a Sober October podcast for Hairdistry, for the guys at Hairdistry, and Tony and Corey, and they didn't know my history. So I start telling them at the beginning of the podcast, you know, this is where I started, this is who I worked for. And they were just like, you know, mind blown. They had no idea. Cause I said, well, I started with hair royalty, and they were like, no joke. You really did.
Right.
You know, and then I talk to these young hairdressers and I'm like, yeah, you know, do you know who Jean Bra is? And they just look at me in that blank stare and I'm like, oh my God, how could you not know who Jean Bra is? You know?
Yeah, there's definitely a disconnect. And I got my first experience of that. I was at Caper, and Caper is the thing they do for the Paul Mitchell students. It's a big show that happens. It's like insane, like just kids on crack, all excited about all these things. They get the best education, they bring in the best people. But me and Melissa were there, and we were watching, they brought out Robert Lebetta, and to me, he's like one of my idols in the hair industry. He's amazing to me, just his creativity and what he does. And I've had the chance to, because of Robert, you know, I used to always be with Robert at the end of all the parties at the bars, and I've gotten a chance to sit with Robert Lebetta and talk to him a lot and have dinner with him and stuff. So I know him pretty good, and he comes out and everybody's trying to Google. I'm watching people try to Google who he was, and it was just like, what the heck? Like, this should be like synonymous with hairdressing. Like, you should just know. And the person who followed him came out, they introduced her, and everybody went crazy psycho for her. And it was just like, I don't doubt that she's amazing. I, you know her not personally, but I know her. I've been around her. And, you know, she has a TV show who she does all this crazy stuff in the salon. So everybody knows her through the TV, you know. And yet if you ask them if they ever watched her do hair, they're like, no.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's just like, it's so insane that you don't know the history of our industry. And I think that that's part of the problem with the industry today and why it lacks certain things, because there's no background. You can walk into most salons and ask people about the history and they have no clue who came before them and what was set in place and all that stuff.
That's a really good point, Abe.
You know?
And I mean, so where do you think that disservice to our industry, our students, starts? I mean, how, you know, if they're obviously they're paying for a really incredible education at Vidal Sassoon or Paul Mitchell, they're going to get more of that than they would at, you know, like I went to City College.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I always tell the story about my school. You know, I went to Bay Vista in National City, and I paid $300 for school. And when I graduated, I got it for free. And I joke with people and say that they gave us bulletproof vests in the kits with our scissors because in my school, six people were shot. You know, they was like,
oh, God, that's awful.
I remember watching these hairdressers in the school, girls getting fights, and they stabbed each other with the scissors. And, you know, it was just so ghetto. And I'm just like, these schools are like Harvard of our industry, right, that there shouldn't be any. And yet, you know, in that, it's so crazy to me. You know, I think it goes beyond the history of what we do, but the way society is today, social media is today, that I just literally had a conversation with somebody and read that in Michigan, the Aveda schools got sued because the students said it was unfair because they're paying for school that they shouldn't be doing towels and sweeping. And some of the schools now, the Paul Mitchell schools, have to hire people to mix color and be completely towel service and stuff like that, because they're saying that that's what they should have a janitor for, and that that's not what they're going to do. And at the school we were just at, they said that if a kid doesn't want to do a client, they can refuse it and they can't be forced to do it. And it's just what are you going to do in our industry when you get out? Like towel service, cleaning. Like when I was an assistant, we had to do the major cleanup.
Everything.
You know, and Margaret wasn't easy, you know? And I appreciate it now. I understand why. Because,
totally.
You know, when a client sits in your chair and looks at the floorboards and says, why are your floorboards dirty? You know, you're like, oh, shit, I didn't even realize that, or look at it, you know, because you don't think about those things. You know, it's like our business isn't just I'm behind the chair doing skill stuff with my scissors and in color. It's a very well-rounded craft that we have. You know, but these kids, this is what they're complaining about. And it's just like, that's so insane to me that you don't want to do a client. You don't want to fold or do laundry or mix your own color because you think that that's beyond what you do.
Right, right. Well, beyond what the tuition has allowed you. Yeah.
Instead of it looking at
allowed
it,
you the comfort
it's practice
of.
And it's learning and it's getting to know a system in a way so when I leave I'm successful at it. I mean, you'd be surprised how many kids we go and teach that they'll be graduating, they're like, oh, I've never really done a haircut because I'm so scared. And it's like, well, that's why people find the forms here that give you a way out. If you mess up, you mess up now, that's when you're supposed to do it, you know.
Dang.
But you also
have no idea.
You watch it when they leave. When they leave schools and they go in, they all want to be their own boss and they want to do these solo salons and you know, they want to own salons, you know? Right. And I always tell the kids, so if you want to own a salon, how far out of school? They're like, right when I get out. I'm like, okay, so you go open a salon and you put money into it and you do all this stuff. What happens when you hire somebody like me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you mean? Well, you're supposed to teach me, mentor me, grow me. And now you have somebody who's been doing hair for as long as I have, and now I'm in your salon and you can't do anything for me. Like, what kind of leader are you going to be? You know, owning a salon isn't just cutting hair and being a boss.
Right.
Everybody wants to.
So what's their response?
They don't. After I'm done explaining what happens in a salon, they're like, oh, I didn't think about all that. I'm like, it's because they have one track mind. They think, you know, being a boss, because that's what is thrown around social media, is great. And I always tell them, I'm like, you're never your own boss in our industry. In our industry, you will never be your own boss. The client. Boss. Sorry.
Good. I'm glad you said that again. I was going to make you say it. Because it got cut off. Wow.
Yeah.
That is good stuff, Abe. Good stuff.
So
you're on the road nonstop educating. And then you're back in the salon. I mean, seriously, you know, what we did for Robert threw me into like total burnout. So you didn't stop.
No.
You're still traveling all the time. And then as soon as you hit the ground, you're back in the salon behind the chair.
Yeah.
Like how, like this is, you know, this podcast is about hairdressers in the thick of it and how we, you know, take care of ourselves and the lessons that we've learned and how do we implement change when we've gotten so, you know, rigid in our work ethic. Like, so what do you do when you've been working as hard as you have? Like, I know you just took a little trip to your wife's cabin, family's cabin, but like during the day, like how do you take care of yourself?
most of the time I don't, which is
crazy. I mean, do you eat?
The last couple of years we got a nutritionist who really set us up for like energy wise and vitamins and all that, because you start to, I started to feel run down in a big way. You know, I did a whole change and all that. We do work where we do seminars for ourselves, through Landmark. We have, one of the leaders of Landmark is a client who we do now is like our personal coaches that we meet with and we get to kind of spew stuff out. And then we get, you know, I say bitch slapped by her because she puts us back in our place on how, because, you know, you do a lot of work and you live a certain way, but things can detract you and push you into different ways, you know, and and we start to pout and become, you know, human. It's the human condition, you know, woe's me and all this other stuff. And so, you know, we do a lot of that stuff. My wife got us a masterclass series, which is really, really cool. And we'll sit and watch that stuff to be inspired in different ways. And I think the biggest thing is always just the goals of why we do what we do. Always remembering what it is. You know, we talk about this a lot about the carrot at the end of the stick, you know, in the old cartoons, they would have the guy on the buggy with the horse and he would have the carrot hanging out trying to get the horse to go. Right. And when you think about what you're doing or why you're doing it, you know, it's like the why for me is what matters to me. You know, when you really sit and ask yourself what matters on the really deepest level, that when you think about it, it makes you emotional. That's what keeps you going when you are ready to give up and you're ready to stop, you know, when the sacrificing and suffering is so much that you just can't handle it anymore. It keeps you going.
That's beautiful.
And, you know, for everybody it's different, you know, for me, it was my kids. And I learned that early on, the stuff that I went through with Robert and all the stuff we did. And I mean, at one point we were on the road 38 weekends a year. I mean, that's a lot, you know, there's 52 weeks in a year and we were 38 weekends. But you know, I grew up poor. My grandma had 12 kids and at points in our lives, we would have all of them grown with their husbands, wives, or girlfriends and their kids. It's about 25 people in the house. And we would move every year, start a new school every year. And, you know, we lived in bad neighborhoods for most of my growing up and where I saw lots of pretty bad things. And one day I was coming home from work and I was working three jobs and going to beauty school. And I was coming home from work and there was some guys outside my house with shotguns waiting to shoot me. And at that point, I had the realization of my life and what was important to me. And, you know, I decided that I was going to have a house for my kids where they didn't have to share rooms with anybody, you know, or live in a garage. I was going to make sure that they didn't have to go and get government cheese and powdered milk and powder. They had to do that. They would have anything they wanted in a neighborhood where they'd go to school from kindergarten to high school in the same neighborhood and have the same friends, you know, and not be around the gangs and all that stuff. So anytime I was getting to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore, that would be my reminder of why I do what I do, you know, and that's what would keep me going. And, you know, that changes. My kids are grown now, so I don't have that.
I was going to ask about that.
Melissa actually just sat me down and was like, what matters to you? And I was like, damn it, don't ask me that right now. Sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes you don't want to be accountable. you know, you want to be able to
totally
to get off of it. But I noticed that the minute that I was done with my kids, I kind of started giving up on stuff. Things didn't matter to me anymore. You know, I didn't care if I went to work. I didn't care if I was doing certain things at a high level anymore because I was done. Mm-hmm. I hit my goal, you know.
Right,
and
right.
So you have to sit and reevaluate and kind of see things through on a different platform, I guess. But, you know, burnout is one of those things where I was always like, oh, I'll never get burnt out of hair. I love hair. You know, it's such a bad word to me. I think that I've had bouts of burnout, but I wouldn't admit it. And I can probably say that last year, maybe it really hit me. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I am completely burnt out. I don't want anything to do with industry. I don't want to do hair. I could care less. Like, I was just done. I was fried.
Yeah, fried.
So I had a conversation with my wife, and we talked things over, and I changed my work schedule. You know, because when you're married, you have to have, it's not just your decision. You know, everything you do affects everybody else in your relationship. And I went to working 10 days a month. So I worked 5 days, and then I would take a week off, and then I would work 5 days and then take a week off. And that settled me back down and allowed me to enjoy hair again and have time for me to be able to do what I enjoy. Because if we don't do what we, for us and what we enjoy, then, you know, it's basically all for nothing. You're not giving yourself like incentives.
Creative space. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's one of the biggest points that I try to get across is that, you know, as creatives, we can't just be expressing our art behind a chair. Yeah. You know, it will grow stagnant and it will start to not inspire and create that creative flow that's necessary for us to do what we love to do.
Yeah. And I think that clients definitely feel that when you're not inspiring your clients anymore, they will easily just walk away. It isn't just about your skill and how good you do stuff, you know?
Right. And then someone says, I wonder why I'm not busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had to check myself with that, you know, because I started to lose clients and it wasn't my skill. It was, I just didn't give a shit. You know, I stopped spending time. I stopped caring. I stopped looking into it. And I share the story with everybody. One of the biggest things that we can do is not be present with people, you know, and when we lose focus and when we lose heart in something, we definitely aren't. And I have a client named Lorraine, and she was married to a guy named Lewis, who is, they're really good friends of mine. You know, when clients become friends. And she was in my chair and I asked her, I said, hey, I haven't seen Lewis in a while. How is he? How are you guys doing? And she kind of looked at me and says, it's been a year since we've been separated.
Whoa.
And it was like a gut check for me because these are my friends and I had no idea. Like, I was so disconnected from everything. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, and she was like, yeah, I had tried to get to have lunch with you. You kept putting me off. I wanted your advice. And it really, like, I could have been there for them. You know, and that was one of the biggest things that hit me was life isn't just about me, you know, it's about who I'm impacting around me. You know, I'm not just here for me. We weren't born and created to be about ourselves. We were born and created to serve others, you know, and that's one of the greatest things about being a hairdresser is we're constantly serving others. So if we're not up to par in any part of what we do, then we're basically useless, you know, in a way. That's how I feel, in a way, to the public of who we're there for, you know. And so taking care of yourself is definitely important. My wife's a big believer in, you know, she got me doing Pilates and yoga and all these other things that I would have never, because to me it's like, that's not manly, you know. It's like,
right,
see me doing stretches like that, that's not manly, you know. But it's definitely a calming to it. And we do meditation. She has this meditation app that she'll pull out. She'll be like, okay, it's time to meditate. And I'll fight it. Like, no, I ain't doing that. And then I'm laying on the bed and falling asleep 10 minutes later because it was so relaxing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I definitely think that you have to look out for yourself. Look out, you know, find things to inspire you, feed your soul, most definitely. And do workshops that work on you. You know, what's happening with you? What's the thing going on that you don't know that's happening, that's being created?
Right.
I think it's really, really important.
Well, it's like I said, you know, the rigidity of our work schedule, you know, gets us into such a cycle, you know, a vicious cycle, really, because of how we're, you know, and that's something I wanted to ask you, like, you know, what do you see that we could start to change so that we don't have that rigidity? You know, how do we change the way that we work behind the chair and still, you know, be successful and still have the income, you know, necessary to be able to have this as a lasting career?
But in as much as I talk about the younger generation coming in, that's one thing that I've taken from them. I had this young girl that would work for me and I would fight with her all the time. She was my manager and I would give her tasks and she would do all the tasks in one day and then want the week off. And then I'd be like, well, no, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. Blah, blah,
blah, blah. And we get in this fight, but she was doing exactly what I asked her to do and just doing it efficient so she can figure out her own stuff. Right. Mm. And I think that we have to, as generations, we get caught up in what the generation was. And for us, it's always work, 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 do, prove yourself. And then you'll get.
Prove yourself.
Right. Well, right. Sometimes you don't get because you're constantly proving yourself. And I think that when you look at how we work and what we do, it's really setting that stuff in to play. It's having that fear because we get told that if we don't do things a certain way, we'll fail. Right.
Right.
Well, I went to 10 days a month and I still make the same amount of money behind the chair.
Wow.
You know, wow. It's just changing the way you're doing things, but not really changing the way you do them, if that makes sense. Keeping the high level, you know, making room for people, charging a little bit more, and being the cause in it. I sat all my clients down and told them, like, this is what's happening. This is why it's happening. I've caught myself being this way, and that's not who I am, and I'm doing a disservice to you. So I need to bring it back, and this is how I'm going to do it. You know,
oh, that's awesome.
And they love it. They always ask me, how are you enjoying your time off? Is it working? Because, you know, and they're like, they can tell the difference. You know, but it's not having that fear because we have that fear. Like, what is the normal thing we talk about hairdressers? Oh, we don't get breaks. You know, we shove food down our face and then we go work and we don't sit. And that's not healthy, you know. And as much as I believed that for so long, you know, Robert always told me if he didn't eat, I didn't eat, you know. And
right.
We'd sometimes go all day with eating. Then I found out that he didn't eat because he just smoked 20 packs of cigarettes a day. And that's and it's like, oh, I don't smoke. That's not fair. Right?
That's not fair.
But
yeah.
that was the rule, right? And, you know, you don't have breaks because if you take breaks, you lose money, you know.
Yep.
And yet that's not the case. You know, it's how you create it. You can create anything you want. And it's really just sitting down and making a game plan of it and saying, okay, this is how it's going to be. And you condition your clients and the people around you to be a certain way.
Well, and I think that's, you know, you taking responsibility for yourself, you know, is that presence of self-awareness that's so necessary to be an influencer behind the chair.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine that your clientele is super supportive and you probably inspired a lot of them and gained respect.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah, and I have a very rare clientele. Most of my clients have been with me for 20 years or more. You know,
right.
You
me too.
Come in and it's like, are you building? I'm like, well, I don't really have room to build because my clients have all been with me, but they're all, you know, been with me for 20 years. They know my whole life. I feel like they're kids. You know, it's like I'm
totally
the same age as their kids, you know, which is crazy when you think about it. I had a client recently that I was an assistant and they were Robert's clients. And their daughters are my age. And now I do the daughters and I do the whole family. And they talk about,
the whole
they remember
family.
Me as a kid. And I'm like, you guys can be my parents. Yep. Like, that's insane. You know?
I know. It's amazing.
I wouldn't be able to do what I do with the outside stuff, with, you know, helping the homeless and the refugees and all that if I wasn't okay. And I think that, you know, having somebody in my life that sees that, because coming from my culture, that's not who we were. We are workers. We are laborers. We just work, 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 work. We don't question. We don't ask. We don't worry about what hurts and all that stuff. We just keep doing.
Just keep moving.
Yeah. And my wife comes from a different mentality, and having that partner really kind of slowly, even though I fight it, has brought me into a good place where I'm doing more work for myself so I can be a service to other people in that way.
Well, and it's beautiful that you're also realizing, you know, how much more room you have to be of service.
Yeah.
You know, and in that space that you've created for yourself, you've come to know how deeply service oriented you are in the way that you are actually going out into the community and doing something for no reciprocation at all.
Yeah.
You have that, you know, you've created room within your psyche and your soul to move out into a broader, you know, level of service and a bigger impact.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't pinpoint when that happened, because I know in the beginning of my career, it was about me and showing off and being like, you know, look who I am as a hairdresser, look at my work and
totally
all that.
Me too, right?
I could care less now about what you think about my work, or should I go to a class and I don't want to do hair. I want to talk. I want to talk to you about life, you know,
right,
and impact you that way. And I don't know where the turn came, but it came and it changed from that about me to others. And I think in our industry that there's no coincidence that hairdressers that are hairdressers do what they do, because we are there for people, you know, people in our chair, people around us. People are attracted to hairdressers. They want to talk to hairdressers. You know, you don't go to a party and people want to talk to doctors. They want to talk to the hairdresser, you know, and for whatever reason. And I really think that that turning point for me was a huge turning point in how I view people and see things. Because I was very closed off, to myself, whether it was the culture I was from or the fact that, you know, I didn't trust people because of, you know, being molested as a kid and what that did to me. I had a very, like, didn't want to let people in, you know, it's like, I'm not letting anybody in. I don't want anybody to see me. Yeah. And I realized that that's a disservice, that my pain and suffering and hurting is actually helpful to others. That sounded kind of, I don't know, sick in a way, but I don't mean it in a bad way. Like, so many people in this world suffer and go through things, and they want to know that people are like them, you know, that people go through the same things they go through, that they're not alone, you know, and a lot of people don't have the avenue to get out of their shit. They're just stuck in it, you know, and shit is good for a certain amount of time. You know, it's like, that's what you need to help grow plants and vegetables and all that stuff. But after a while, it starts just to smell and be stinky. So what do you do with that is important.
Right.
How do you make it grow? And I think that's what I did, is instead of just sitting in it and having to be stinky, I helped use it as growing me as a person to be able to help other people.
Oh, that's the best thing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, we take our experience out into the world and share it with each other, and we commune in a deep way. I think that's the only way that we're all going to heal from all of the wounds that we carry.
Yeah, most definitely.
But I think it's, you know, and that being said, you know, how you show up for the people that you serve in that openness, have you noticed a shift in the way that your clients interact with you as a result of how you have changed?
I noticed a shift how the world reacts to me. Everybody. Yeah, which is really cool. And there's more understanding and forgiveness, in a sense, of who I am, along with gratitude to be able to open up and share. And what I find is that there's a lot of people that have been through what I've been through in my life. And, you know, without me saying anything, they wouldn't know what I've been through. They would just look at me and be like, oh, he's so-and-so. But the minute I open up and I start to share, whether it's my gang story or the molestation story or the fact that I had two kids and, you know, one kid in high school, one right out of high school and all that, you know, they find a sense of relatability, and it opens up to just being able to talk to people. And then I can share with them what I've learned in life and how I've been able to overcome my stuff, because I've truly overcome. I have freedom from all of it, which I didn't have at all. And
it's beautiful.
You know, it doesn't affect me. It's amazing to be able to talk and inspire people. We had a kid recently in one of the schools that we taught in a couple of weeks ago that she sent me a message and said that she had done years of therapy. And the fact that we just brought up the "what matters to you" question, She said that changed her whole life, and she tried to commit suicide twice. And what she realized was that she didn't matter to herself. And that when we asked that question and she sat with it, she realized how much self, and that she wasn't paid attention to it, you know? And it was just like, wow.
It's beautiful.
You know?
So powerful, Abe.
Everybody, I start to see that everywhere. Like, everybody has so much power to be able to help somebody, you know? It's just understanding it and knowing it. And as hairdressers, again, we minister to our clients behind our chair. However you want to use the word minister, whether it's biblically or not, it's what we do. And we minister to them. And do we have the tools and the right things to be able to do that, you know, and help them? Because it's what we do on a daily basis, whether you see 5 people, 1 people, or 20 people, you know, clients have this thing with us that they just feel free to talk and share and give, and we become a part of their lives, you know, and it's a disservice if we don't, if we're just sitting there thinking that we're making them beautiful by cutting their hair. You know?
Well, and I'm glad that we're having these conversations, you know, that more and more we're having these conversations with each other and in broader, you know, arenas, so that we can really start taking more responsibility for who we are behind the chair to our people.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, you know, no matter, and that's one of the things that I say, you know, is there is so many different types of hairdresser that you can be in the industry now. But no matter what kind, you know, of hairdresser you want to be or think you are, you're touching people in a way that very few do, you know, and we're in an intimate environment with our people in a way that there is, you know, there's very few people that are touching people's head in such a way that it encourages them to feel vulnerable. And we hopefully are making them feel safe in that arena of vulnerability. And we're transforming, you know, the transformation, the carrying someone's vanity through the transformation process is so intimate.
Yeah.
But we're not, you know, we're not talking about that in beauty school. We're not talking about how when you touch someone's head, they're going to spill the beans, you know, that they're just going to tell you everything about their lives that they probably haven't even told their best friend or their therapist.
Yeah.
You know, and we're doing our beauty school students a disservice by not helping them get a bigger picture of what that looks like.
And I think the successful hairdressers understand this. And they take it to a different level where they see the whole package. And yes, it is a complete disservice to the beauty school students to not have them understand and see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's frustrating too, because it's within that is the responsibility that no one's telling them about. It's, you know, the joke that we're always, you know, saying that a hairdresser should have a degree in psychology as well. It's serious.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, we are on the front line of our community's self-care and mental health, really.
Yeah. I completely
we're the first ones to know, you know.
Yeah. Completely. I had a couple things these last couple of weeks with a client that let me know that, you know, she was diagnosed with cancer, and I had to give her a haircut, you know, because they were going to cut open her scalp, and, you know, you become, you know, it's like, okay, like I'm in this with you. I'm going through this with you. You've been my client forever. I know your kids, like, you know, there's a special feeling there. And then I had a client sit in my chair that just lost their grandson, and they had posted about it, and I read it, and I thought that he was sick. And when she was in my chair, it was her first time out of the salon, and she's sitting in my chair. I walk over to her, she's crying before I get there. And she's telling me that this is the first time she's been out of her house. And my first reaction was, well, let's cancel your appointment. Go home. Like, you know, you're it's not okay. Much. You're not ready to be out. And right when I said that, she just started to just say everything. Like, it just started coming out. And I realized that I was the sounding board for that moment. And, you know, her grandson hung himself, and it wasn't because he was sick, and she didn't know how to deal with it. She was questioning everything. If it was a game that there was going around, a challenge, or because he didn't come off as somebody who was depressed or had anxiety, and he was 14 years old, you know, and it was just this whole thing. You're just sitting there like, oh my God, you know, and at that moment is when I thank God that, you know, my parents had raised me in a certain way, with God's understanding, and that I've done all this work to be able to connect and give her the right words, you know?
Yeah.
And for most of the conversation, I just sat and listened, which most of us can't do. You know, I put my hand on her hand and I just listened to her, you know, spew all this stuff out, and my heart was breaking, you know? But yeah, we definitely need to know and understand that it's beyond the skill level of what we do. And it goes to a deeper personal level.
Yes, it does. And in you know, also in context to how do we hold space for people in that way and not take it on, you know? How do I not take responsibility for her feelings, but share space with her while she goes through these emotions without taking them on and needing to fix it?
Yeah.
You know, feeling overwhelmed by it.
Yeah. That's a hard part.
Right.
Because I take on things very personal. And then I have to kind of cleanse myself, I guess, per se, you know, kind of go back and just be like, okay, you know, and I think that I start to understand that everybody's story isn't my story, you know, and everybody's pain isn't my pain, and I can share in that moment with them, but it doesn't mean that I have to leave with it, and it doesn't make me a bad person for not taking it on with me and being mourning their mourning for years or days or whatever, you know. It's, we have that moment, I feel for you, you know, let me pray for you, let me, whatever it is, you know, let me just give you some advice that I've learned, or some encouragement, you know, some flowers. And know that, you know, next time she comes in is going to be a different conversation, you know, that you have to prepare for that too, that it's not always going to be the same, but that we don't have to take it on and live with it. And because what will happen, and as a salon owner, you know, I talked about wanting to kill all my hairdressers. What started to happen was you take on everybody's shit, you know, and it sticks with you. It's like, you just keep adding stuff to your backpack. You know, and your backpack becomes like 1,000,000 pounds, and you don't know how to remove it. And then all of a sudden, you're those people. You know, you're those people.
That's so powerful.
You know,
yeah.
And you're taking it on, and it's not your problem. I had one of my hairdressers that I just loved and was one of my favorites quit one time, and she quit, and she started telling me all these things that why she was quitting, and I was like, that doesn't sound like you, and that doesn't sound like you, and then by the time we got through with it, she was like, oh wait. That was this person that said that, and that was that person that said that, and I just took it all on, and I thought I was them, and I'm like, things could have been different if you don't take people's stuff on that way,
right?
You know,
right?
Yeah, that can kill you. Yeah.
So when you had that realization, I mean, you know, we're not an easy crew, you know, the motley crew of hairdressers that are out there. We're all different shapes and sizes, and we've all, you know, got our reasons why we've become a hairdresser. But you've dealt with many, you know, thousands of different types of hairdressers throughout the years. You know, how did you learn to not fill your backpack up with all their shit?
Yeah, that was really hard in the beginning. And I think when I left Roberts, part of that was that carrying other people's stuff. Because people always wanted to talk to me about their stuff. Like I was always, I've always been a good listener. And I think I started carrying it. And I think I just realized, like in the middle of owning my own salon, that I couldn't carry all this stuff anymore because I lost myself. I lost who I was as a person. I lost my creativity. I lost my love for life. And all I kept, it was like a reoccurring thing in front of me is, you know, they say your life flashes before. It was everybody else's shit that was flashing before me, and I couldn't find myself. And that was the biggest thing when I shut my salon down, is I didn't know who I was. You know, I had to be somebody for my employees, I had to be somebody for my family, I had to be somebody for my clients, I had to be somebody for the owner of the building, I had to be somebody for the people I teach for, I had to be somebody for my friends. And in all that, I also had all their shit, you know. So in trying to find me and find my stuff, it was so difficult. And I think it was at that point that I said, I can't do this anymore, you know? And I think Landmark helped me with that, to be able to see that, you know, that we are all human. We all suffer. We all hurt. We've all been through things, and, you know, it's ours, you know, mine isn't yours. Yours isn't mine. Sorry.
That's okay.
That's the mail, every day the mailman comes.
Oh my God, how funny.
And my basset hound sits at the door. He knows the time.
Oh my God.
He will sit there, right, like 20 minutes before, and he'll sit and sit, and then he'll see him and just go ballistic. And it's crazy because if I take the dog for a walk and the mailman's out, he goes up and licks the mailman, doesn't bark at him, nothing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Sorry.
Poor mailman.
Right. He laughs. He thinks it's funny. But it.
So Landmark really helped you understand, you know, where,
yeah,
where to put that stuff.
Yeah, completely.
That's amazing.
Put it in certain things and how to gauge it. And really, you know, when people start to go on and on and on, you know, I learned just to be like, thanks for sharing. I got it. I understand, you know, where you're coming from. Because sometimes when we talk about things or we go through, it has nothing to do with what's happening or to that, with mm-hmm. that person. It's our circumstances exactly. in our life. And I've exactly. learned that when somebody comes up, there's a story behind it. Something's happened. And now I got to kind of weave through all that and just be like, okay, what's the bottom line? This is the bottom right. line. Leave everything else out of it. Let's deal with this.
Right.
You know, and then you start to move on because it's the story that kills you. You know, it's like when somebody's late, they go into this whole story of why they're late, you know? Well, no, you were just late. Regardless of what it is, the bottom line is you're late. Okay, let's move
yeah.
on. Yeah. You know, I don't need the whole story. And that really helped me in a way to learn about people. And I, you know, and also reading books, you know, on there's a book I love. It's called The 48 Laws of Power.
48?
Yeah, Laws of Power. And
okay.
Yeah, it's a thick book, but it's basically on people and you know, how people
Interesting.
Are. And you get to start to get a feel of different things, and it helps you navigate and be a leader. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. But, you know, reading books about people and people's habits and stuff, you start to see that, you know, it all comes from, this is what I tell people, it all comes from our culture, our religion, our friends, the identity mm-hmm. they built in us, what we've learned, and it's all bullshit. Yep. It's all not real, you know.
Well, it's ours, you know, but it's a story. It doesn't actually belong to us, you know. If we can kind of set aside the things that we think we know about ourselves, we'll start to learn something new and have different perspective, you know. If I can just have a relinquishing of what I think I know,
yeah,
then I can be open to a new opportunity and learn something new about myself and how I am with other people.
Yes, very true.
So the 40, what is it again? 48
laws of power.
Laws of power, and definitely applicable to people in our industry.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, cool.
Completely. And it is also a chapter in there. If you want to build your own cult, you can.
That's awesome. Well, some salons are.
Right.
Oh my gosh. So what's on your agenda for the next couple weeks? You're working, and are you going back on the road? Where are you headed?
Yeah, we're headed to North Carolina in a I think a week and a half or so to teach. They want us in the schools do a program where they do fundraising, and they get, if they hit a certain amount, they get a educator for free. And
oh my gosh, how cool.
This school asked for me and Melissa, so we're gonna go in, and this is their gift for winning, so we're going in and create a cool class for them. And outside of that is getting ready for the holidays, working in the salon, and then also you know, I do a lot of homeless outreach and refugee outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And Thanksgiving and Christmas coming, I want to do something pretty big out on the streets here in San Diego with food and blankets. Last year we did a 100 blankets, pillows, socks, beanies, and hoodies to get them out for the cold coming. And then there's a big caravan of refugees coming up. It's been all over the news. And so I'm trying to prepare to figure out a way that I can go help that out and feed them. And, you know, I don't look at it as the stories and the news and all that. They're people, you know, and they're hurting and they need their... They're giving up everything for trying to get help, and, you know, they just need some food and stuff. I met a chef. I did this really cool thing because of what I've been doing. Somebody read an article about what I do and saw my pictures and asked me to be a part of this fundraising dinner thing where they brought these people in to talk about refugees and what can we do to help. And they had these 5-star chefs at the Ceviche House in Old Town. come in and create this whole night. And there was like a 5-course meal. And for every course, they gave a question and everybody would answer. And it was interesting to me. At first, I was a little thrown off because I was told something and then it kind of didn't happen. And I was watching these people with money kind of sit around talking about how to help refugees. And it's just like, well, you have no clue what it's really like. So after it was all done, I sat with the chef and the person who put it together. And I said, what if we really wanted to make a difference? And why don't we go down to the houses that I work with in Tijuana that have hundreds of refugees? And you bring these people down there and you have them eat dinner with them at a table and get to know them.
Wow.
And the chef was super excited and they are. So we're trying to figure that out and set that up in the next month or so. Where we actually take them down to actually sit with real refugees that they can tell their stories and they get a real sense of what it's like for them in their life and actually break bread with them. So I'm excited about that project.
That's amazing, Abe. I mean, there really is something super powerful about sharing meals with people of different cultures and different circumstances.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. Thank you.
And then my service. One that I'm really excited because it has to do with my photography is I'm doing a photo shoot for women that have been abused or more than just abused. It's women that have gone through things in life as what women deal with. And I want to do a photo shoot with stories to put out so people can get an idea of how hard it is for women. As a hairdresser, I can never as a man, I can never relate to what it is to be a woman. As a hairdresser who's around women all day long, I hear the stories and I see the pain.
Right.
And I think right now in the climate of what's happening,
beautiful.
Have to be put out a little bit. So I'm setting this up. I have some volunteers that are willing to be a part of it and share their stories. And I'm excited about it.
Oh, I love it. I think that's incredible. Thank you.
So even though I need time off, I still keep putting myself busy and I'm trying to figure out what's that in my life.
I want to remind you, as I remind myself, you know, I'm doing all these things. Like, vacation sounds wonderful, but I have so many things that I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I have to do. I want to do these things.
Yeah.
You know, so to go and sit in a lounge chair on the beach just does not sound appealing to me. You know, and what feeds me, what makes me energized is being of service to other human beings. And it's like, that's the creativity that has to be expressed beyond what you're expressing behind the chair.
Yeah.
And that's what you have found and what I have found feeds our soul, you know, and other creatives, you know, they might want to, you know, cook or sew or craft or who knows, you know, but it's like creativity to me is, you know, it's speaking, it's writing, it's movement, it's art, it's... There's so many different ways that we can use our body, minds, and souls to create more.
Yeah.
And, you know, to just see what your capacity is incredible. You know, it's like, I think I don't have enough energy or I think I don't have enough time. And then, you know, God, spirit, whatever you call it, whatever you want to name it, creates the time and space for the things that you really need to do and want to do and that are beneficial to other human beings.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
So, Abe, if people want to come to your salon and see you in person, is there opportunity for someone to come in and take a class? And where do they find out about that?
Yes, we do a lot of education in our salon. We just had Nico Abriel, Halle Berry's personal hairdresser, in our salon teaching.
So cool.
We constantly have people. We're doing things. We do a spiritual weekend retreat once a year. That's pretty amazing. They can call our salon. The phone number is 619-497-2880. Send us an email at theworkshophair@gmail.com. Our website's down right now. Melissa's recreating it. Our Instagram.
And then on Instagram.
Mine is A Baron Photography.
And that's
ABEBARRON Photography. That's my... I don't post a lot of hair stuff there. It's mostly inspired photos. And then our salon one is the workshop hair.
Cool.
Yeah. And we love when people come hang out, you know, come hang out. But I always tell people I like free labor. So if you're going to hang out, you're going to work.
That's awesome.
Right.
I love it.
If they want to come in and just have a chat, I'm more than willing to, you know, as long as I'm in town. I'm very open. And very accessible, and Yeah, we're here in San Diego and we love to be a part of the community. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Well, I am so thrilled that I got to talk to you and got it all recorded for people to listen to. So awesome.
Thank you.
I adore you. I love you. I respect and I just feel honored to know you and share this path with you. So thank you so much for everything that you shared.
Thank you for inviting me and to be a part of this. You always have been in my life for a long time and I have so much love for you. So
yeah. Very exciting. I'm going to have your wife on here in a couple of weeks too.
Oh, that's awesome. I keep telling her she needs to get her arm better because they want her to work on the Top Gun movie. And I'm like, I'm a movie.
Oh my gosh.
Freak. Top Gun's one of my favorite movies. And I'm like, you got to get on that show. I don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Tell her she needs to go have it like cryo freeze or whatever they do. And they go into the, you know, it's like 10 seconds. You go into cryo for muscle therapy.
And it helps.
Yeah, it totally helps.
Oh, I can just put her arm in the freezer. I mean, I don't have to pay all that extra money. I told her there's a football player, Ronnie Lott, who played for the 49ers. And in the Super Bowl, which is, you know, the biggest game of the season, he did something to his finger and they weren't going to let him play.
Oh my God.
And he was upset. So at halftime, he stayed in the locker room. And after everybody went in and he had them cut his finger off.
Shut up.
So he can play. So they bandaged it up. And if you look at his hand, his finger is snubbed. Yeah.
Stop.
He's like, this is the biggest game of my life. Who knows if I'll ever be in it again. And I want to play. Yeah.
Oh,
so I told my wife,
God,
you got to figure out what you got to do with your arm. If he cut his finger off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a story, and that's something I do not know that story at all. I'm not a football fan, so I wouldn't have heard it, but wow, thank you. Thanks for that visual. Jeez. Oh my gosh, I love you.
I love you too. Yeah,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And
welcome. Anytime.
Many, many blessings and guys until I see you again. And and take care of yourself. I hope you get to relax for the rest of the day.
I am. I'm going to
chill
out. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, love.
All right. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Okay. Bye. Again, thank you for joining me for this episode of the India Dunn and Company podcast. If you have any questions about this episode or would like to receive more information about Abe and all of the amazing things that he does, contact him through his email or contact me, india@indiadunn.com. And if you would like to share this with your friends, please do. I would love to have more listeners, share all of this amazing information with more people, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment. Have a great day.